I'd like to add my welcome to all of you, especially visitors, as Brother Ruff did earlier, and to introduce our speaker to you. If you were here in 2010, you remember that Brother Bronger, J.R. Bronger, was with us and conducted our gospel meeting in the fall of that year. I'm sure you remember that the lessons were well received, and we're happy to have him back with us. If you were here in the last hour and heard his lesson about dealing with doubt, you know that you're in for a treat in this hour. And so we ask you to give careful attention to Brother Bronger as he presents the lesson. Brother Bronger lives in the Kansas City area, preaches for a congregation there. And we're sure thankful that he's with us for this week. Brother Bronger.
Thanks so very much, Wilson. I appreciate that. I'm just glad to know when it was I was here. I had forgotten. I knew it had been a long time. My wife, Sue, was with me then and is unable to accompany me this time. And she just wanted me to express to all of you hello and take care of me this week and send me home safe, full. I'm just so happy to be with you this week. I tell you what I want to do this. Let me say a couple of things. Number one, not only do I thank the elders for extending to me this invitation, and I'm serious about that. I'm humbled any time that someone allows me to come and be a part of them for a week or for a few days to preach the gospel, and I'm humbled that you've asked me to come back, and I thank you so much for that. Also, I want to say to you that I'm here to serve you this week in any way that I can. I'm staying with the Legs, and you can contact me there, or I'll be happy to give you my cell number if there's anybody I can visit or study with or pray with or just encourage. You just let me know. I'm here to help you and serve you in any way that I can all this week. And also, if you invite someone, if you're a member of this congregation and you invite someone to come and visit, I promise you I'm not going to say or do anything in this pulpit that will cause you to be ashamed or embarrassed that you've invited someone. So you work hard and I'll work hard, and we'll just ask God to bless our efforts together. After this week together, we'll look back and see if we put forth the efforts, both sides of the pulpit, that we need to do. And you do your part, and I promise you I'll do my very best to preach what I believe to be the truth of God's Word. To begin our study this morning, I don't always do this as we begin a study. It's probably a good thing to do. But I want to begin by reading a few verses with you from the epistle of 2 Peter. In 2 Peter chapter 2, and we'll read about five verses here, and then we're going to go back and use some of these verses sort of as a jumping off point, as a text to deal with some things that I think are important for us to deal with. But Peter said in verse 4 of 2 Peter 2, beginning, he said, "For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example of those who would afterward live ungodly, and delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds." And so what I want to talk about this morning is what I consider to be the story of Lot. And I'm going to have sort of a subtitle to that, as the announcement's already indicated. But this is what I want to deal with. I want to deal with the story of Lot. Now, one of the interesting things about Lot is that he is mentioned in the New Testament three times. In our text that we just read from 2 Peter chapter 3, he is mentioned. Jesus mentions Lot twice in Luke chapter 17, one in reference to his wife. And so when we think about the story of Lot, our minds immediately, I believe, if we're you know, been Bible students very long, our mind immediately goes back to Genesis, especially chapter 19. In Genesis chapter 19, the story of Lot contains, or is contained in that section of Scripture, talks about that he was living in the city of Sodom. God looked down upon the cities of the plains. Sodom and Gomorrah are mentioned particularly as being very, very wicked, and God was going to destroy them. Peter talks about this and points out that they served as examples of what God would do insofar as judging unrighteousness is concerned. But we're familiar with Lot being led out of the city by the angels along with two daughters and his wife. We're also familiar in that story with God raining fire and brimstone down from heaven upon those wicked cities and thus destroying those cities and all the cities of the plains and everything that grew upon the ground in that part of the world. And so that's something that we're very familiar with. Plus, we're also familiar with the fact that Lot's wife disobeyed God and looked behind her. She was told not to do that. And she became a pillar of salt, a horrific statue, showing to us in literal vivid terms that the wages of sin is indeed death. And we saw it, or we could see it in the case of Lot's wife. And so these are things that we're very familiar with. We're very well acquainted with the story of Lot in that perspective and from that standpoint. But the way that I want to examine Lot this morning is I want to say, insofar as the story of Lot, the subtitle of that would be, here is a bad or a good man who made some bad decisions. So the story of Lot is bad decisions that have been made by a good man. Now notice, I term him a good man. But you know, if all I had to reach my conclusion about the man Lot was the Old Testament, then I would be hard-pressed to be able to say, okay, a good man. But you see, I have more than that. I have the very text that we read a second ago. God delivered righteous Lot. Now that's how God describes him through the inspired Apostle Peter. Righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. Now, if you were to look at, you know, trying to define the word righteous, you may find that it could include the definition of upright, virtuous, keeping the commands of God, approved and accepted by God. But you know, that's kind of interesting when you think about the history of Lot, that he would be viewed as someone that would be virtuous or accepted by God. Again, if all we had was the Old Testament, it would be hard probably to reach that conclusion. But if we're going to talk about Lot, we're going to study the story of Lot, we have to know a little bit about who he is. Now, the story of Lot is interesting because it's really revealed to us in the early chapters of the book of Genesis in connection with the man called Abraham. Lot was the grandson of Terah, who was the father of Abraham and Lot's father. And so that would have made Lot then the nephew of Abraham. Now, Abram was called by God to leave the Ur of the Chaldees and to go into a land and go to a place that I'll show you. And thus was the beginning of what became the Hebrew nation. Well, when Abram left his father's house and he left his homeland and he began to wander, going about looking for the place that God was leading him to, Lot accompanied him. So Lot traveled with his uncle Abraham. And they would travel about. God was leading them and they were going about. And Abraham would stop and he'd build altars out of rock and he would offer sacrifices to God. And they began to increase their holdings. And so they became very wealthy insofar as their livestock, their herds and their flocks were concerned and their servants. And so they had just this great big entourage that traveled from place to place. At one time, they went down into the region of Egypt. They traveled as far as Egypt was concerned and became even more rich in their livestock, became even more wealthy in their life. Now, there's some things happened in Egypt that we'll not talk about that are very interesting in and of themselves. But after they came out of Egypt, something began to change. Something began to happen. So they had traveled in all of this unity and had all of these herdsmen and had all of these servants and had their flocks and their herds. And they would basically travel from watering hole to watering hole, from pasture land to pasture land. And things were going well with them. But now something occurs. I call this a crisis. A crisis occurred in the life of Lot and Abraham. And you know, I got to tell you about crises. You know, crises are things that define us. Crises have a way of bringing something out of us that we may have kept hidden. It has a way of bringing something out of us that we might not have even consciously known was there. But a crisis occurs and suddenly we see ourselves in an entirely different light. I tell people, it's kind of like this. You know, when we gather in an assembly like this, and isn't it wonderful? And by the way, your singing is absolutely fantastic and it's encouraging to me. And you know, had I not wanted to worship God in song and try to teach and admonish those sitting by, I'd just sit there and listen and love it. But isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful to just be among the people of God on times like this? And you know, we come into buildings like this, and one of the things that I like so much about it is seeing people perhaps for the first time and meeting people for the first time. And I enjoy renewing old acquaintances and seeing, you know, how you've aged and I have. No, I'm kidding. but you know, you see thing, and you just love it. But I got to tell you something, and hear me very carefully about this, and I'm not wanting you to take this where I do not intend for it to go. But you know, when we're looking at each other like this, this is really not descriptive of who we are. I mean, not really. I mean, we got up and we showered and we cleaned up and we put on, you know, nice clothes and we came to a place like this and we put our best foot forward. And that's the way that it should. Now, some people can't. But most of us do. We put our best foot forward and we, you know, like to make a good impression. And these are, things are good, and I'm not knocking that. But you want to know how we really are. It's not necessarily how we are when we come through a door of a church building and we greet one another. How we are is the way we conducted ourselves at home preparing for this. It's how we conducted ourselves when we were traveling. It's how we conduct ourselves when the neighbor mows down all of our flowers that we put out. It's how we conduct ourselves when we're cut off in traffic. It's how we conduct ourselves when we're slandered and we're slurred. It's how we conduct ourselves when the crisis occurs in our life. You know, very often a crisis will occur in our life and we'll, like I said, something will come out of us and we'll take a step back and you say, well, wait a minute, that's politicians do this. That's not the real me. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I'm sorry to tell. Well, you know what? What I said doesn't describe really who I am. Well, Jesus said it does in Matthew 12. For out of the abundance of the mouth, the heart speaks. And usually I'm able to keep all of that in check until there's a crisis that occurs in my life. And then I'm liable to say something. I'm liable to do something. I'm liable to respond in a certain way that reveals something that's been lying submerged within who I am. When Abraham and Lot came up out of Egypt, a crisis occurred. And then we get a glimpse of Lot as we can examine the story of Lot. Now, let's notice what the crisis said. Now, I've got some dots in there that indicate not all the verses are listed. You may want to look and consult Genesis 13. Now, the land was not able to support them. Them here being Lot and his herdsmen and Abram and his herdsmen. That they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great. And there was strife. That is, there was some conflict that then began to occur between the herdsmen of Lot and the herdsmen of Abram. And it could be that they were disputing over grazing lands. It could be that they were disputing over watering holes. But there was a strife between them. So Abram said to Lot, "Please, let there be no strife between you and me, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please, separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left." Now, what Abram is trying to do is he's trying to diffuse this crisis. He's trying to tone down the atmosphere here. And he says to his nephew, "I'll tell you what, Lot, if you want to go east, I'll go west. If you want to go to the left, I'll go to the right. But let's just separate. Well, there's enough here for all of us. This land is fantastic. So you take what you want, and it makes no difference to me. If you want to go here, then I'll go there. But we'll separate, and so that we can keep peace between us." And this is, I believe, the crisis that occurred that reveals to us something very interesting in the story of Lot. A good man who made some bad decisions based upon the crisis and the offer that was made to him by his uncle Abram. Now, let's notice these decisions. That's what I want to do in the study that we have. And hope you've got a Bible open, reading along with us, looking at Genesis chapter 13 in particular. We'll look at some other passages too. But I'm going to look at the decision that he made, or the choices that Lot made. And then as we go through those, I'm going to look at that from three perspectives. And then as we go through those, I'm going to sum it up by having a pseudo-interview with Lot as we examine this. And so let's look at the choices that was presented. And we do this by going back to Genesis chapter 13. Remember, the crisis had occurred. "Is not the whole land before you?" Verse 9, "Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left." Now, look at the first part of verse 10. "And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go toward Zoar." Now, I want you to stop and consider this for just a moment. I hope to kind of let you see something maybe that you've read over and didn't stop and contemplate about it. But it said, "Lot lifted up his eyes and saw." Now, let me tell you something. There isn't anything wrong with making choices. What was it Joshua said in his farewell address? Joshua 24 and verse 15. "Choose this day whom you will serve." Now, you know, that's kind of like saying, lift up your eyes. You want to serve the gods of the Amorites? Or do you want to serve Jehovah? Make a choice. You know, God said, "I have set before you life and death. Therefore, choose life." So there isn't anything wrong with being astute. There isn't anything wrong with making choices. This is not where I'm going with this. It's not that, you know, it's nothing wrong with evaluating the landscape. And this is certainly what Lot was doing. It wasn't, you know, as a matter of fact, sometimes it's wise to make some good, clear evaluations of the situations in which we find ourselves. So, it's not the fact that he made choices. But I want you to notice there's a couple of things that I see here that were perhaps wrong with the choices he made. And it begins by, he lifted up his eyes. Now, I want you to think about this. He already had a lot of wealth. He had a tremendous amount of livestock. He had a tremendous amount of servants and herdsmen. He already had a lot of that. But now he lifts up his eyes, and what did he see? The Bible said he saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. What he was able to see is, you know what? I'm going to choose this land over here because in my estimation, it's got the best pasture lands. It's wet, a lot of watering holes over here. It's got, you know, this is exactly what I need to do what? I'll be able to increase my holdings. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at a land over here that the only way that you could describe it, it is like the garden of the Lord. It is so lush and so overgrown with vegetation, it could only be compared to the Garden of Eden. Okay, Uncle Abram, that's for me. Oh, by the way, not only when I lifted up my eyes and I saw the well-watered plain of Jordan that you could only compare to the Garden of Eden, I see something else in the background. Well, what do you see? Well, I see the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, Lot lifted up his eyes. He saw all the plain of Jordan, well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go toward Zoar. And so not only did he have all these watering holes and all of this pasture land, who lived in Sodom? Who occupied Gomorrah? People. And what do people need? People need wool. I've got wool. People need meat. I've got meat. People need milk. I've got milk. And so I can sell my wool and my meat and my milk that makes cheese, and I can sell it all in Sodom, and I can sell it all in Gomorrah. So he lifted up his eyes and he saw some opportunities here that maybe Abram wouldn't have, that if he went the other way, that he would not have been able to take advantage of. So Lot lifted up his eyes, and we're going to see the reason for the choice in just a moment. But I want you to stop and think for a moment, ladies and gentlemen, how many times do we follow that scenario? How many times are the decisions that we make today based upon what we can see and what we can perceive that's going to, number one, increase our bank account, number two, increase our popularity, increase everything that we, you know, make it bigger and better? These are choices that are played out probably 1,000 times every day, even among Christians. Christians will have an opportunity to move into a barren, desolate place, not in order to start a work of the Lord, but in order to have a better opportunity. I lift up my eyes and I see, you know what? If I move to Timbuktu, I'm going to be able to have this and I'm going to be able to have that. Bigger and better and more prosperous. I look at verse 10 and maybe I'm making some assumptions there about what was in his heart and his mind, but what I know is he chose what he saw, and what he saw looked good, and it could only be compared to the Garden of Eden. And he saw opportunities to increase his herds and increase his holdings. And I'm going to tell you, it is a short-sighted, narrow-minded, shallow human being who makes his choices based upon what he can see. Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 that what we see is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. We need to be making choices based upon souls, based upon eternity, rather than what we can see. We may be good people. We may have good families. But if we begin to make choices based solely upon that which is tangible, we are shallow. We're not thinking these things through. Lot lifted up his eyes and he saw. He saw opportunities that perhaps even Abram didn't see. But now we're going to continue on. I want you to notice now what happens in verse 11. Not only now he lifted up his eyes and he saw, but then Lot chose for himself. Now the old King James Version says Lot chose him. But I like the idea that he chose for himself. All the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Lot chose for God. No, that's not what the text says. It doesn't say that Lot looked over here and he saw, this is an opportunity that I will have to serve God. No, he didn't. Lot chose for himself. You know, somebody said one time that Abraham followed God and Lot followed Abraham, which serves to illustrate the fact that God will indeed have no grandchildren. No, you know, you're either a first generation or you're not, insofar as your relationship with God is concerned. Abram served God, or followed God, and Lot followed Abraham. And then when it come a time to make a choice for himself, or make a choice that Abram put him to, he chose for himself. He didn't choose for God. No indication here that he began to calculate God into this decision. Lot chose for his wife. No, that's not what the text says. The text doesn't say that he took his wife into consideration. Well, Lot chose for his daughters. No, it didn't say that he chose for his daughters. It says he chose for himself. He didn't, as far as the text is, didn't choose for God. He didn't choose for his wife. He didn't choose for his daughters. The Bible says that Lot chose for himself. This is a serious matter. Men, listen to me. It is a serious matter when we make all of these arbitrary and sometimes capricious decisions without considering the effect that they're going to have upon our wives and upon our children. We need to be wiser in this than sometimes we have allowed ourselves to become. Lot saw this opportunity and he chose for himself. Like we say, he didn't take his family into consideration. Kind of reminds me of the rich farmer, the rich fool in Luke chapter 12. Who, you know, he was very prosperous. Had, you know, we've heard it told before, had all of these bumper crops. Everything was going well. He didn't have enough room to store. He didn't have enough granaries. He didn't have enough silos. He didn't have enough barns to store everything that he was able to harvest. This is what I'll do. I'll tear down these barns. I'll build bigger barns. I will this and I will that. I have many, you know, much goods laid up for many years. I have all of this. This is what I will do. This is evidently what Lot was doing. It'll be okay. I'll choose for myself. It'll be okay. As a matter of fact, we'll probably be a little better off. We maybe get out of tents and get into a house. We can put down some roots and just quit, you know, going from place to place to place to place. Well, this is going to be better. It's going to provide us some security rather than some insecurity. So I'll choose for myself. But what's poor old Abraham doing this time? Well, verse 18 said he's over in the plain of Mamre building altars and worshiping God. What's Lot doing? Lot's lifting up his eyes. He's making a choice for himself. And while Abram is down in the plain of Mamre building altars to the Lord, worshiping God, now we find Lot pitching his tent as far as Sodom. Now we read in verse 12. And Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. And the question could be asked, Lot, are you going to move into Sodom? Maybe he didn't intend. Maybe he only wanted to get as close to Sodom as he could to use its economic opportunities. But he moved close. He pitched his tent, you know, close to Sodom. And the next time, even if that were not his intention to move into the city, you get over in chapter 14 and verse 12, we find now he's living in Sodom. He pitches his tent as far as Sodom. Then you pick up the reading in chapter 14, and now this is where he is living. Listen to me. When you want to nudge up as close to sin and wickedness, ungodliness, ungodly people, and you want to kind of nuzzle up close to them, you know what? You better be careful, because the next time you look, you may find yourself in the midst of them. Because this is exactly what happened to Lot. He pitched his tent near Sodom, and then we read about he's moved into the city. There is this influence. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Maybe he has some rationale behind this. Maybe his rationale included, you know what, I might be able to help these folks. I can be a stabilizing influence on these people. I can be an influence upon them that they've not had before. Well, they're a bunch of pagans over here, and I know the God that Abram's been worshiping, and you know what? I might be able to help those people. They can help me financially, and I can just do some good for them. I'm not saying that was in his mind. I'm saying things like that could have gone through the mind of someone who's making a choice like that. He made these choices. Bad decisions made by a good man. He lifted up his eyes and saw. He chose for himself. And then he rubs elbows with them, moves in close to them, and eventually finds his way into the city. Now, those are the three things that I wanted to talk about pertaining to his choice. Now, let's stop and do a hypothetical interview with Lot. Okay, Lot, you've made your choice. You've separated from Abram. He's gone this way and you've gone that way, and now you're living in the city of Sodom. Now you're using their commerce. You've increased your holdings, and you've got a permanent residence there. My question to you is, okay, how did this work out for you? How did it work out for you? And we can break that question down into four subparts. And if you want to ask, Lot, how did it work out for you? Well, Lot, in the first place, how did this help you spiritually? How did your move close to Sodom and then eventually into Sodom, how did that help you spiritually? And I want you to stop and think about something. You look back over in chapter 18 and verse 20, just before God was going to destroy the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Verse 20 says of Genesis 18 that the sin of that city in which he lived, God said that sin is very grave. And so just stop a minute. Now stop. Stay with me on this. He moved into a city that God looked at and said, you know what? That city, the sin of that city is deep. Sin of that city is grave. It is a bad place to live. Well, Lot, how did that help you spiritually? Remember our text? Remember the text that we read as we began our study over in 2 Peter chapter 2? You know what Peter said? Peter says that Lot was oppressed by the wickedness that was going on about him. He was tortured. He was spiritually tortured. His spirit was, as it were, it was just shriveling because of all the wickedness that was going on around him. How did it help him spiritually? It did not help him spiritually at all. The Bible said he was tortured by the filthy conduct of those wicked people. He was living in the midst of rampant ungodliness. You want to know? Look in Genesis 19. The men, the angels who came to visit Lot and tell him that God is going to destroy this city, there was a homosexual community there in the city that actually wanted to rape those men. That's how wicked the city was. And Lot was disturbed by that. Lot, he said to them in verse 7, please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. Don't do this. As a matter of fact, you want to know how it helped him spiritually? He was even willing to give his daughters to satisfy the lustful desires of those men, to keep them from doing what they were about to do to his house guests. This is how bad it was. How did it help him spiritually? He was tormented day and night by their wickedness. What do we know by that? What do we learn from that? You know what Paul said, do you not? And really speaking in the context of false teaching, evil companionship corrupts good
morals, 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. Hear that, know that, believe that. That is from God. The people with whom we associate, they have a way of either lifting us up spiritually or causing our spirit to just simply shrink and dry up. How did it help your spirit? It didn't help him at all. You know, this is why Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, you know, you don't have fellowship with the works of darkness. You know, there's no communion between light and darkness, between Christ and Belial. You just don't have any fellowship there. There's no relationship. Why are you seeking to establish a relationship where none can exist? It didn't help him spiritually at all. Proverbs tells us in chapter 12 and verse 26, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. And again, I'm just reading what God said. How did it help you spiritually? It didn't help him at all. Well, let me ask you a second question, Lot, in our hypothetical interview. How did that move help your family? Now, I understand it didn't help you spiritually, but how about your family? Did it help your family? Well, we know what happened to his wife in Genesis 19 and verse 26. She disobeyed God and became a pillar of salt. He left the city with two of his daughters. And they fled. They got out of the city. God destroyed the city. Now his wife died. And we can just simply stop that interview right there. How did it help your family? Well, it didn't. My wife's dead because of this. Because of her disobedience to God. Well, what about your daughters? You know the story of Lot's daughters? The story of Lot's daughters is horrific when you begin to think about it. Look at verse 30 of Genesis 19. Then Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains with his two daughters who were with him. For he was afraid to dwell in Zoar, and he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Now the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is no man on the earth to come to us as is the custom of all the earth. They just felt that everybody was destroyed. There was nobody left but their dad and them. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father. So they made their father drink wine that night. And the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Incest. Next night, the younger daughter did exactly the same thing. Lot, I wonder how much of that filth went on in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. I got to tell you something. One daughter gave birth to a son that became the ancestor of the Moabites. The other daughter gave birth to a son that became the ancestor of the Ammonites. So anytime that you read in the Bible about the Ammonites or the Moabites, think Lot. Think of the decision that Lot made that resulted in the incest that he had with his daughters that gave birth to that lineage of people. Parents, we better think long and hard before we allow our children to make compromises and to make decisions that's going to have some long-term effects upon them, whether we're talking about moral decisions, doctrinal decisions, cultural decisions, because there will be some long-term ramifications here. Lot, how did this help your family? Choices that you make are going to have a direct impact upon your family and the strength of your family and the spirituality of your family. But dads and moms, you better think long and hard when it comes to your decisions, because it's going to redound to what your children become. And you know what? We as parents need to think of souls, not successes, in the world's idea. We need to be thinking about the souls of our children and not their popularity. Don't think in just a capsulized form. Think long term. Because there's one day you're going to be old and you're going to look back and you're going to be able to say with the Apostle John in 3 John in verse 4, he said, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. That's the only thing that's going to be important. Lot, how did it help you spiritually? It didn't. I was crushed every day. Lot, how did it help your family? Well, that didn't help my family. My wife died and my daughters, I committed incest together. Well, Lot, how about Sodom? Were you able to influence Sodom? Were you able to do any good for the people who lived in Sodom? Well, get into chapter 19, and we know that's not the case. You ever notice chapter 19 of Genesis begins with, now, the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. How many times do you read that and you kind of picture, like in the area where I was born and grew up in southeastern Kentucky? You think about going down to the courthouse on a Saturday afternoon in those rural southern cities or towns, communities, and you see some of those old guys that we just simply referred to as the local loafers. And they'd be sitting around the courthouse, and they'd have their Barlow knives out, and they had a little stick of cedar. They'd just sit in there on the courthouse, and they're just whittling and passing the time and watching people pass by. And sometimes we read about people sitting at the gate of the city in the Bible, and we think, well, they're just maybe these local loafers. No, that's not it at all. When someone arose to reached the point of sitting in the gate of a city like Lot was there, according to Deuteronomy 21 and verse 19, these were usually the elders of the city. These were usually the people who made judgments insofar as needs of that city. As a matter of fact, when you get down to verse 9 of Genesis 19, that was one of the complaints that the people had. This man come in among us, and now he's a judge. So Lot had risen, as it were, to a position maybe of some degree of prominence in the city of Sodom. Well, were you able to influence? Were you able to use your position and maybe help them some? Were you able to influence? No, he was able to do absolutely no good. You know who was able to do some good, or at least was trying to do some good? It was Abram back in Genesis 19, or back in Genesis 18, when the angels come and told him, we're going to destroy the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. He said, are you going to destroy the righteous with the unrighteous? No, we won't do that. Well, if there are 50 righteous people, will you spare? Yeah, you can find 50, we'll spare Sodom. Well, how about 40? Yeah, you find 40, we'll spare Sodom. 30? 20? 10. If you can find 10 righteous people, remember Lot and his family lived there. If you can find 10 righteous people, we'll spare the city. They couldn't find 10 righteous people. Lot lived there I don't know how long. He had risen to the point of prominence in the city, but there were not 10 righteous people in the city. So Lot, how did you help the city? Well, he didn't help the city at all. As a matter of fact, when it was time to leave, he even lost his influence with his sons-in-law. They thought he was mocking. They thought, you're not serious. Oh, come on, man. You're not serious. He lost his influence, and he absolutely had no way of benefiting that city at all. Christians, we turn on the news, and we lament the condition of our society and the world. And you know what we do? We complain about it. We watch it. We get upset about it. We worry about it. We fret about it. And all of these things that we think, well, if I just elect this person or I get this person out of office, I get the right people in there, everything. Wait a minute. Do we not stop and realize that Jesus said to Christian people, you are the salt of the earth. We are the preservatives. And I'm going to tell you something. If we don't do a better job than what Lot did in the city of Sodom, what is going to be the future of the culture and the society in which we live? You want to do something to help? I'll tell you what, it's not necessarily who you pull at the polls, who you vote for and who you select. It's what you are and who you are and the influence that you have as a Christian, as someone who represents Christ in this world. What we need to do is get out of our holy huddles and get out into the community and convert the world to Jesus Christ. That's the answer. That's the solution. Lot did no good.
for his culture and the society in which he was living. And sometimes I have to look at myself, am I doing any better? And this shows us the futility of moving in and rubbing shoulders with the wicked and the evil. That does no good. We have to be a preserving influence and not allow them to be a leavening influence. You're the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its savor, it's good for nothing other than being thrown out on a dunghill. Question 4. Lot, did you do any good financially? Did you make any money when you moved there? Well, he moved in as a wealthy man. He left with nothing. Everything that he had, everything that he touched, everything that he owned was destroyed. It was burned up. Kind of reminds me again, I go back to Luke 12, verse 20, the rich farmer, the rich fool, had all of these things. Tonight, your soul is required of you. Now, whose will these things be that you've provided? What good is it going to do when in the final analysis we're going to die and leave it all behind? Or it could be that we would be living when the Lord returns, and as Peter said, the world, the earth, and all of its works will be on fire. It will melt with fervent heat. The elements will all be gone. Everything that I've ever owned, everything that's ever owned me, will be destroyed. Lot, how much money did you make? Didn't make any difference how much you made. Everything that he owned was gone. And one day, my friends, let me tell you something. One day, when the singers get together and they're singing in the sweet by and by, and the preacher is saying a few words to try to comfort the family, and old friends are eulogizing the life that you lived and the influence that you had with them, the only thing of importance is not what you left, not what you earned, but the only thing of importance is what was your relationship with God. And what about the decisions and the choices that you've made? What was your relationship with God like? And what was the influence upon your family like? And what was your influence upon the community like? Did you make any difference in this world in which you live? All of us now are at the point of making decisions. Jesus asked a very sobering question. What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? The song that we're going to stand and sing in just a moment, let me say to you before we do that, please do some soul searching. What about the choices and the decisions that you've made in life? Have they enhanced your relationship with God? Have they strengthened your family spiritually? Have you been able to be an influence for God in this world in which God, by His providence, has allowed you to live? Have the choices that you've made and the decisions that you've made benefited your soul? If not, you can make some changes today that will have not only an impact in the near future, but in eternity as well. You believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and you've never gone beyond that. Then let me say to you, act upon that faith. Not only believe that He's the Christ, the Son of God, repent of your sins, confess your faith in Him as the Messiah, and come before this assembly this morning, confessing that and being baptized in water for the remission of your sins. Be raised to walk in newness of life, making the best decision that you will ever make in your life. Then build upon that in loving and serving Him all the days of your life. If you've done that and you've gotten off track, why don't you come home in repentance and prayer? We'll help you in any way that we can. But right now, make a decision that you will never regret. Make a good decision by a good person. If you're subject to the invitation, why don't you come right now as together we stand and as we sing.